RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
On Friday morning, I caught up with Mike Benz, disinformation expert in the USA. Of course, the big story on Friday was guilty on all counts in the Trump trial in New York. So timing was with us there. I asked him about that. And then we wanted to find out about media literacy and NewsGuard. So we chatted about that. So here is my recorded interview from Friday with disinformation expert Mike Benz. Mike Benz is a former State Department official with responsibilities in formulating and negotiating U.S. foreign policy on international communications and information technology matters. Mr. Benz founded FFO, the Foundation for Freedom Online, as a civil society institution building on his experience in the role of championing digital freedom around the world in the public sector. And we've got Mike on this morning to talk Trump, media literacy, and NewsGuard, and whatever comes up in the cancelling and censorship world. Mike Benz, welcome back to Reality Check Radio. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into media literacy, I want to ask you your response to the Trump verdict.
Well, it's kind of an amazing day in American history. We have violated a 235-year gentleman's agreement in this country not to convict presidents from the other side of the political aisle. This is something that the U.S. State Department has frequently sanctioned other countries for doing whenever a country arrests political opposition that the State Department is backing. We put sanctions on them. We kick them off the U.S. dollar. We attempt to bankrupt them in order to make sure that the politicians we like are not prosecuted by a criminal justice system. And not only so, for example, you know, in Russia, the CIA and State Department, and this is just my assessment, this is not inside knowledge, but I could paint you a very colorful picture to back this all up if you're interested. But, you know, Alexei Navalny was a guy who was backed by a whole coterie of CIA cutouts, like the National Endowment for Democracy and Bellingcat, who was trained at the Jackson School at Yale, you know, which is not just Yale University and its intelligence connections, but the Jackson School for Global Policy is, you know, was named after someone who was nominated for CIA director. And, you know, his job was to foment peaceful protests in Russia in order to overthrow the Putin regime. And when he was arrested, polling at less than 2% of the vote, we passed sanctions on the Russian Federation for putting him under arrest. And Trump is actually winning the polls right now. He's not just a candidate for president. He is winning in all seven battleground states as of yesterday's rolling polling average, meaning he would get 300 electoral votes, which is basically a blowout in U.S. Electoral politics. So the guy who is massively ahead in polls presently, even left-wing polls, even New York Times are all showing this similar thing. They can't win it at the polls, so they're winning it using prosecutors, which is a tactic that the U.S. has done to, you know, third world vassal states. This is, you know, the Biden himself bragged about economically bribing Ukraine in order to replace its prosecutor, Viktor Shokin. If the international news is aware of this, this is something that Soros and the State Department types have had an obsession with, controlling prosecutors to control elections. But now it's been brought fully home to roost. And of course, the prosecutor here in New York, largest campaign contributor, was George Soros. Very convenient, because Trump's foreign policy threatened the Soros financial empire. So that's about the best return on investment you can get for a buck, is you buy the prosecutors. Now you don't even need to buy the editorial lines and the media institutions and the academics and the think tanks. You just buy a prosecutor for a song and you win the election that way. It's disgusting. But I should note that I don't feel the rage.
That's what I was going to ask you next. Is there rage?
If folks want to check out my X account, it's at Mike Benz Cyber. I have a video at the top of the feed. It's a 22-minute video that I recorded just into a webcam the day the final indictments were announced last year. This is almost 10 months ago. And this was when the final of the 91 felony charges against Donald Trump were unveiled. And that was a very somber, reflective, kind of dark energy to that, where there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of, darkness to it. But I actually don't feel that presently today. Part of that is because my job is to kind of be an archaeologist of scandals and darkness. And I, at this point, in a way, this is so over the top that it's clarifying and almost energizing. You knew this was going to happen. There's no way. We have a 98% conviction rate in our courts here. The state of New York is a moral dead zone. There is no justice in New York, in a New York City trial court. Every single way a court decision could be rigged, this one was rigged, even to the point where the jury instructions said that jurors don't even need to agree to the same crime in order to reach a consensus verdict. So basically, you don't even need to think he's guilty. They don't even need to all agree on what he's guilty of to get a guilty verdict. But then, there were 100 ways that this thing was rigged top to bottom. Trump wasn't even allowed to bring expert witnesses in half the cases to offer rebuttal testimony or to impeach witnesses. The judge didn't allow Trump's lawyers to make opinions on law, but allow the prosecutors to it. They put a gag order on Trump so that he could not defend himself in the court of public opinion. There was no gag on the prosecutors. I mean, just think about that. Your president having effectively a ball gag placed in his mouth while he gets it in the rear by the system. Americans will remember this day forever. How can you not?
Yeah. And I think this probably segues into the bigger picture because and tell me if I'm wrong, it seems to me that this is kind of there's an upside for Trump here. He'll be in the news constantly. He'll be a victim character to many. Does this mean that any social media coverage of him will be censored? Because if he's doing that well in the polls, he's probably going to win. What is the last line of defense? Is to start stopping people talking about him? Is it, do you think?
Well, that's one. I don't know that that's really possible right now, though, in time for the election. I mean, it's certainly part of it. Things like this new EU Digital Services Act and the mandatory disinformation compliance that U.S. platforms have to comply with around so-called election misinformation. That's certainly going to be weaponized. Here in the U.S., we have state laws that are now compelling censorship from various angles. But at the end of the day, we are in a better position free speech-wise than we were in 2020. Elon Musk has restored, almost unfettered free speech to Twitter at this point. We have video sharing alternatives to Rumble that did not exist in 2020, did not have the kind of functionality or ability to sort of host podcasts. There is some independent advertiser networks that are now spawned to allow monetization of alternative views. So, I suspect that it'll come down to, if they decide that Trump cannot take the presidency, that it'll come down to there's so many tricks that they could potentially have up their sleeve at this point, whether that's through funny business with the voting machines, whether that's through having NGOs register illegal immigrants to vote because there's no check on citizenship on illegal status on voting anymore, whether that is through orchestrating a kind of domestic color revolution if Trump does win the Electoral College, in order to shut down the government and create alternative electors, so to speak. The same thing they indicted 20 of Trump's lawyers for attempting, they'll do themselves. So they've got a lot of tricks to stop Trump should he win fair and square. And I do expect him to have a electoral college fair and square victory at this point, but I don't think that this election is about the polls. I don't think it's about the people. I don't think it's about the voters. I think that this election will be determined by our deep state. It will be determined by our blob and how far the blob is willing to go to absolutely crucify all burning embers of the legitimacy of American governance, how far they're willing to burn it to the ground versus whether they might allow some sort of deeply wounded Trump 2.0 administration to take the helm temporarily if Trump promises to put enough blob monsters all around him.
Wow. Okay. So last week here, one of our hosts interviewed Dr. Robert Epstein on Google's insidious surveillance and manipulation tactics. I mentioned that because many of us listening to that didn't realize how far and wide and all-encompassing Google is. There are other names out there. NewsGuard. Who is NewsGuard?
Narrative Guard. Yeah. NewsGuard is Narrative Guard.
Narrative Guard.
Yeah, they were. So NewsGuard was set up after the 2016 presidential election to stop another person like Trump from winning an election again. They were set up by the blob, the foreign policy establishment, in order to stop the rise of populism, both in the U.S. and all across Europe, when Brexit had just occurred and Marine Le Pen was winning in the polls in France and Matteo Salvini was winning in the polls in Italy and AfD was winning in the polls in Germany and the Vox Party was winning in the polls in Spain. And so all across NATO, the blob was getting its butt kicked. And so they came together with a conspiracy. And this is just what it is. I mean, this stuff is all so well documented. It's insane. You know, we had our own Department of Homeland Security publish a whole society memo for how the government could provide support to this. You had the National Endowment for Democracy, which is our most prolific CIA cutout. And you had USAID, which is a combination of the State Department and the CIA for purposes of funding soft power projection overseas. But you had all of these institutions come together and prop up this censorship mercenary firm called NewsGuard, whose job is to apply a rating label to the information integrity of news sites online. So if you're a good little boy and you print government propaganda, you get a score of 100 from NewsGuard. But if you question the government, well, then you get a score of 20 or 30 or 40. It's like your fourth grade English teacher, writing a big fat A or B or C or D or F on your report card for whether you've been a good little boy for the school. But the problem is it's backed up by the fact that they have an economic partnership with the World Advertisers Federation and with the Global Advertisers for Responsible Media, which are the two effectively largest pools of online advertisers in Western civilization. So what that means is if you get slapped with a bad grade by Narrative Guard, you go bankrupt. You are not allowed to be monetized by Google Ads. You are not allowed to be monetized by any of the $2.6 billion in programmatic ad spend that moves through GARM. You get your head chopped off.
Your gun to the head.
And they did this all deliberately. Let me just be perfectly clear about this. As soon as the 2016 election ended in 2017, our motley crew of CIA cutouts, like the National Endowment for Democracy and USAID, literally got in a room with the heads of policy with Google and Facebook. I actually have this on my X account. I have literally at the recording of the meeting, because it was online, where the National Endowment for Democracy administrator has the Google and Facebook policy heads for content moderation in the room and basically lays out this master plan to financially bankrupt, to change the financial incentives of the online news industry. Wow. In order to add carrots and sticks to punish the reproduction of fake news or what they called unfiltered alternative media. And then
that's us, by the way. That's us. Right.
Yes,
there.
That is. It was actually nice enough for them to even put in the caption, you know, what it really was, unfiltered alternative media. That's, you know, then, I mean, that's, it's a state mandated filter on your media in order to prevent any slips in the editorial line. This is the problem. You know, they never believed in democracy, not for a half second. Democracy was simply a predicate for regime change all along.
Wow.
Because you know what democracy is? Democracy is unfiltered alternative media. The problem is in that democracy where unfiltered alternative media, when anyone's their own publisher, the blob gets its butt kicked. Corrupt elite institutions get eroded. But, you know, like I always say, you know, they redefine democracy to be no longer a consensus of individuals, but a consensus of institutions. And that is now, you know, it's that stakeholder ecosystem that now dominates American life and frankly, all across the Western world. And, you know, we're living in a very strange day in the history of all that with Trump's conviction.
We sure are. Understatement. I keep hearing this term media literacy, and on the surface it sounds, well, yeah, I get that. I mean, people should be literate with the media or have media literacy. What does it really mean?
Yeah, it's a lie. It's a scam. It's a big scam so that they can control all of your media. Media literacy, you know, you see that word literacy and you light up and you think, well, we have a literacy problem. You know, underprivileged inner city school children are having a difficult. No, what they mean is media literacy, meaning if you don't read the right media sources online, you are illiterate as deemed by the state and you need to get your mind checked in order to reprogram what kind of media sources you ingest. So you can almost think of it like media OPEC. If you're familiar with the right. OPEC yes. oil cartel,
yeah,
you know, this is you're in the cartel or you ain't. And so this is basically media, like a media cartel. You have to read whitelisted news. You can only access whitelisted news on public Wi-Fi in the schools. You will get docked on school exams if you cite from a populist sympathetic news site. You have to basically, you know, cite the government for your research papers, for your homework assignments. It's, you know, it's basically kind of the system that Wikipedia
has.
Boy,
they've got it buttoned down, haven't they? Really?
Well, they do. I mean, because you have to understand, they used to have this control system back in the day during the analog media era. When we had things like Operation Mockingbird, or we had the CIA media task forces this is an example that's sort of useful to keep in mind. Noam Chomsky did a survey of American media in 1985, and he concluded after doing a state-by-state and national syndicate news analysis that there were about 25,000 news-producing institutions in the United States of America in 1985. 25,000, that's it, across all TV, all radio, all print newspapers, all magazines, all periodicals, 25,000 total media-producing institutions across the United States. There's 25,000 media-producing institutions in a small town in Kansas in the United States.
Yeah.
Because anytime anyone hits the retweet button on Twitter, they're
that's
a publisher.
What they are. Yeah, they're a publisher.
Anytime someone makes a TikTok video, they're a publisher. They did not have. So back when there was only 25,000 media institutions, and within that, only about 100 that were considered actually influential, you know, papers of record, so to speak, like the New York Times and the Washington Post. We only had, remember, until 1996 in the United States, there was only three, you know, news stations essentially, or I guess, you know, Fox didn't come out until the mid 1990s. From the 1940s until 1980, there were only three TV stations on all of TV for news.
Think about
NBC, that. ABC, yeah. and CBS. And all of them came out of the Office of War Information. All of them came out of the Pentagon. All three of them were started by the Pentagon.
It was so simple back then, Mike. So easy.
Yeah, you only needed to know a handful of people to control every organ of media output. And there was some heterogeneity. There was some disagreement within, you know, within that circle. But the fact is things that were really out of bounds, there were bumper cars. There were bumper cars on the bowling alley of public opinion because everyone, you know, that they were all in it together. It was a small crowd. If you could very easily make a pariah of the Miami Herald, for example, you know, during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when JFK was able to kill, through censorship, the White House threatened newspapers who printed stories about the ongoing Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, it was a very controversial thing. There's been a lot of hand wringing about whether or not that was, you know, how they were able to get away with it. But it was sort of national security because the world might blow up because there might be nuclear bombs on our border, you know, just 90 miles off the coast of Florida. But, you know, that was one of those situations where all you had to contain was like the Miami Herald. Yeah. You didn't have to contain 10 million people with Twitter accounts who are interested in the issue.
No.
But so the question is, how do you do that at scale? You need something like a media literacy institutional program and media literacy, you know, hundreds of censorship mercenary firms. And there's hundreds. Like, state media literacy has now been mandated by law in the state of California, in New York, in Illinois. Well, that's every single public school. You add that up, that's probably about 60 million people right there. So that's going to be, I don't know, what, 100,000 school teachers are now going to have to be trained in order to be professional censors, to wag their fingers and take points off tests for anybody who cites a pro-Donald Trump news publication in the United States. But this is, they need this sprawling control apparatus because of the sprawling freedom that the internet used to provide us.
In your piece on NewsGuard on your website and media literacy, you wind up, I think, by saying this is Clockwork Orange on steroids and it's being mandated by governments. And now, it's been a long time since I've seen Clockwork Orange, but I kind of remember it. So,
yeah, I can tell you, Clockwork Orange is a Stanley Kubrick film, I believe.
Yep,
So you have a sort of charismatic, charming criminal who is a sort of a bad boy in the eyes of the state. And, you know, the sort of most famous, iconic process in the movie is his reformation in order to come around and be propagandized by the state's propaganda output. And there's a famous scene in the book and in the movie where what the state does, he tries to close his eyes to all the propaganda that's being projected on the screens around him. And the state puts him into this apparatus where they peel his eyelids open so that he can't look away. And so you are forced. There's no shutting off your eyes to what you see. You are forced to watch the propaganda. And, you know, because this is one of these things where a lot of people, they say, oh, the government propaganda, but the government propagandizes everything. They tell you what to do and what not to do. And if you don't believe it, don't watch it. Well, that's the thing with this Clockwork Orange technique is you don't have a choice. They glue your eyes open. You, what are you going to do? You're going to not go to school with these, you know, you're going to get a failing grade on your media literacy class and then not get into a good college. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to not do your media literacy compliance certificate. So you're going to now fall afoul of EU laws or Brazilian laws or Canadian laws around media literacy. They force compliance with this digital mockingbird operation so that you have no choice. And that's, you know, that's where we are now. And frankly, you know, the only way to take this on is by having shows like yours and a million others that all amplify this until it's common knowledge, because the only way to be able to get people to mobilize against it is for it to be on the tip of everyone's tongues. That's how politicians are motivated to take action. That's how prosecutors and treasurers are motivated to take action, is to respond to the incentive And that incentive comes from everyone demanding it. So I demand it. I think you and your listeners should be demanding
it. I want it. Yeah. All right, Mike Benz, thanks for giving us some time. Foundationforfreedomonline.com is the website. And nice to chat with you, Mike, and hopefully we can do it again. Thank you.
You too, Paul. Take care. Bye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.